sinin. Or God loves those who do good, who are virtuous and who do good. So he said, go, for you are a free woman for the sake of God. This is one of the very famous hadiths which has been narrated regarding Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the virtues of Imam Zainul Abidin alayhi salam in the words of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Another missile test by North Korea. Four long-range cruise missiles were fired. A repeated scenario in response to U.S. joint war games. But is this time different? North Korea says it is. And the U.S. and its regional allies believe these missiles are being developed with the intent to arm them with nuclear warheads. In this edition of the program, we will look at why the U.S. is ramping up military pressure instead of diplomatic overtures on Pyongyang, and why it is content in doing that, knowing that North Korean missiles are capable of reaching the U.S. mainland. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Spotlight. William Jones from the Executive Intelligence Review joins us from Leesburg. Jim Cavan, a political analyst and blogger, joins us from New York.
The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I'd like to welcome you both. And William Jones, let me first start with you. First, get your reaction on the missiles that were fired. We're looking at four long-range cruise missiles. The question is whether this time is different based on how the capabilities, as it was reported, it said these were strategic cruise missiles designed to demonstrate its ability to conduct a nuclear counterattack. The key word being counterattack here, I think. So do you deem this to be different than the previous missile launches?
Well, they're obviously improving their capabilities here. Reports have it that some of the missiles had made a oval and even a double eight maneuver, showing that there is greater maneuverability in these missiles. And, of course, they're reaching now to almost 2,000 kilometers. It's really a serious upgrade on the part of North Korea. And as the situation becomes more tense, directly after the maneuvers between Japan, South Korea, and the U.S., where the U.S. is doing significant upgrading in the Asia-Pacific region generally, aimed at North Korea, but also against China. This has created a great deal of tension where the North Koreans typically react by trying to show some of their capabilities. So I think there is an increased tension, there's increased capability that North Korea is now showing. But I think they're doing it in a context in which the tensions are being fed by U.S. policy in the region, which is increasingly more pushing the military rather than diplomatic solution to the problems, especially the problems with the DPRK.
So you're seeing a relationship there between the U.S. militaristic approach towards the region and the number of missiles or the times the missiles are being launched by North Korea?
Well, sure. I'm sure they are trying to utilize the maximum capability that they actually have there. I think this probably would not have occurred had the maneuvers not taken place, and the maneuvers, of course, are directly aimed at North Korea and have been criticized by North Korea prior to their being held in the area, so that it was a direct affront. I think they felt. To their attempt to maintain some kind of stability in the region, and they're reacting in the way that DPR always reacts.
Jim Kavanaugh, taking a look at the joint war games that was reported on this between the U.S. and South Korea, what was different about this is the fact that it was held in Washington, and basically they called it a tabletop exercise, which focused on, I guess, hypothetical scenarios of which North Korea would use nuclear weapons. And this was the first of its sort under the South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol. Is that, what is that indicative of? Or what does that show, that it was practiced in the U.S.?
I'm not sure that shows very much. The United States and South Korea have engaged in real military exercises, and that's what really annoys the North Koreans. It was a tabletop exercise in Washington. Of course, it's presented as a defensive exercise, but of course, even in the middle of a defensive exercise, they're going to plan for an invasion of North Korea, and North Korea knows that. So it's just the fact of the military cooperation and the tight military cooperation between South Korea and the United States going to Washington to do these exercises that has North Korea on edge. Look, everybody has to understand the history of the Korean War, which is kind of a forgotten war. That was a vicious war. The United States bombed North Korea to rubble, and they did that to prevent the unification of the peninsula under the forces that had fought the Japanese, which was a vicious Japanese occupation. And they did that in support of a dictatorial regime in the south, which was composed of people who had collaborated with the Japanese. So the North Koreans have a history. They know, they have a historical memory of what it means for the United States to attack them. And that's why they're on edge all the time about this. So, you know, they're never going to stop being on edge about North Korean, South Korean, United States military exercises and military cooperation and building up forces. And now the United States is building up Japan again to be, Joe Biden vowed to make Japan a potent military force. You know, again, the Japanese occupation of Korea was vicious. So the North Koreans have a historical memory that most people in the West, you know, the Korean War was glossed over in our history, and not for them. So they remember this, and they're going to be on edge about any American military exercises in the region. And they know what's going on with China and Taiwan. They know that. Even NATO has said, we've got to extend our reach into the Pacific. For some reason, the Pacific's part of the North Atlantic now. So there's a world situation, and in that area, too, which is on the edge of conflict. Sure. And the Americans seem to be ready for conflict everywhere, and the North Koreans are aware of that.
There's a number of points that you raised there. Before we get to those points, however, I got to find out whether we can zoom in, William Jones, on who goes first. Trying to figure this out based on the way things are being reported. I mentioned what's happening in the States with this tabletop exercises, but this is an exercise held where the U.S. has announced that this is being done because of a potential nuclear strike by North Korea. Okay? They're looking at it that way. But the North's posturing is one of counterattack, meaning the U.S. or its allies would attack first. Is that accurate, reading it that way? And then there's this, the fact that this does not read with how each stands in terms of attacking first, because each thinks the other is going to attack first.
Well, I think that's probably the, have. I think they would be wary of trying to start a nuclear conflict with the United States of their own volition, since they realize there's going to be perhaps a destruction of the nation. But they must have that capability. The reason they're going with a nuclear, becoming a nuclear power, effectively becoming a nuclear power, is that they feel that there's no other option open to them, that the opposition of the United States to the DPRK has been pretty straightforward through the years. The only exception was when President Trump successfully conducted negotiations with North Korea. People felt that it could be resolved diplomatically. But he was heavily criticized by the military-industrial complex while he was still president, while this was still ongoing. And then afterwards, of course, this has been totally rejected by the Biden administration, which feels that only a policy of showing force, peace through strength, can make any headway with regard to the DPR. Of course, that causes the major conflict, so that they see these as the nuclear capability that they have as a capability of being able to fend off and to respond to a possible nuclear attack from the West. But they do it by showing what they can do, because words are not going to convince anybody in the U.S. military-industrial complex that North Korea is not a threat, unless it shows that it is. And this is why they're very demonstrative in showing the weapons, rather than pursuing an aggressive policy. They want to show that we can respond,
okay,
and you should do this with some respect, and you should try and come to some kind of a negotiated position with us. But at this point, it just has not succeeded because of the tremendous opposition to the United States of diplomacy in the DPRK-U.S. relationship.
So your guess, yes or no answer, if I may ask you that, William Jones, based on how you see it, if the situation continues this way, who would strike first?
Well, I do not think that the DPRK would make any first strike unless they were significantly threatened, or they felt that they were significantly threatened.
Well, they're feeling that right now, right?
Well, that's a real question. What is the red line here? I mean,
I tell you why they're feeling that. Let me just throw this stat out there. You have all the different missile tests that have happened. I'm going to address Jim Kavanaugh with this. Jim Kavanaugh, you have all these missile tests that North Korea has executed throughout the years, and then boom, 2020. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say that. I shouldn't use that word. Then you have the year 2022, and you have 72 of them. You had 22. Missile tests in a span of 3 days. I think they're feeling threatened, or they're trying to say something. What do you think? What do you make of that? And this happening during the tenure of the current U.S. President Joe Biden?
Well, I think they are trying to demonstrate that if we get hit, we can impose serious damage on those who come after us. Look, they have certain problems with this. They did demonstrate some maneuvering capabilities with these cruise missiles. But they're still saying they're not yet capable of carrying nuclear weapons. The nuclear weapons, ballistic missiles they have are still liquid fuel missiles, which means they cannot be readied very quickly. The United States knows what's happening there. If North Korea were to start fueling up their ICBMs for an attack on someone, the United States would know it.
Can
so
they?
I think so, probably, because they're liquid-fueled missiles. They require preparation. They
so
can't
why,
be easily
so
moved
then why
around.
So why not push for some kind of diplomatic move, something, a concession maybe of some kind? I'm guessing when you have missiles that can reach the U.S. mainland, and you say that maybe it could be capable of nuclear warhead, which the reading was by the U.S., that this is a rehearsal for developing nuclear warheads or putting nuclear warheads on it, you would guess there'd be some kind of diplomatic overture. Why isn't there one?
Well, I don't think, is the American administration ready to have a diplomatic diplomatic overture with North Korea? Because it doesn't want to. They could put in this. The Korean War is still going on. There's no peace treaty.
William Jones, what do you think?
The United States doesn't want to put an end to it.
Let me get William Jones an answer on this. I'm sorry, Jim Kavanaugh. William Jones, why not?
Nobody can say for sure what the North Korean leadership's decisions will be in this. There's a lot of erratic movement. There's a lot of irrationalism. However, I think it's quite clear to them that if they would launch a strike against the United States, or even a strike against the United States facilities like in Guam, or perhaps even a strike against Japan, there would probably be an overwhelming reaction by U.S. nuclear forces, which would essentially end the North Korean state entirely. I think there's a certain understanding of that. And therefore, I think that they would be very reticent in starting that fight. But at the same time, they want to have the capability for a variety of reasons, for defense reasons, but also in terms of the political influence that being a nuclear power has in the world, which they also want to attain. But I think short of that, I think that if they launched an attack, it would be like a hand grenade that would be set off in North Korea itself, ending the North Korean state. Mm-hmm. I don't think the North Korean leadership, as mercurial as they are, is totally insane on this issue.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
All right. Well, you both have mentioned Japan on a couple of occasions now, so let's look at the military defense budget. It has been raised by 26%. That's the largest. What does that mean when it comes to what, Jim Kavanaugh, what you said? You said that the U.S. is going to be pumping them up with arms. First of all, does Japan want to really get in on this with the U.S.? Is Japan acting on its own free will when it comes to the way that it stands with North Korea?
Well, I think there are political factions in Japan that want to rearm, that would like Japan to become a potent military force, quote unquote, in the region again. And they are de facto, the United States is promoting that and doing that, and they will do it. Now, it's not just in relation to Korea, but it's in relation to the region as a whole. And, you know, again, it is very, the peculiarity of the North Korean situation is unique. And again, the Japan's relationship with Korea is terrible. And historically, you know, I don't think they're looking to reinvade and reoccupy Korea, but they are part of the American hegemonic domination of the Pacific region. And that's what they've thrown in their lot, like Europe has thrown in its lot, Western Europe and Eastern Europe with the United States and Europe. Japanese have thrown in their lot with the Americans, and we are going to be part of your hegemonic program in the Pacific region, which means we're going to support whatever you do in China and whatever you do in North Korea.
Okay, since you mentioned China, need to ask you about that, Bill Jones. What is the relationship between China and North Korea?
The relationship is still a friendly relationship. I don't think they have control over what North Koreans do. They have some influence. But I think they're also very wary and uncertain about where that's going. They would like to have a diplomatic resolution to the nuclear issue. They do want a nuclear-free Korean peninsula. They would like to see this moving forward, but they are not the chief players there. And as long as there is no indication from the United States to achieve such a solution, they have very little they can do. The issue of North Korea, of course, is also, in one sense, defensive for them, because the fact that the North Koreans are there as a former ally and still a very good friend, a lot of trade relations between the two, this is also preserves a buffer in many respects against Japan in particular, which is becoming more hostile, at least in the defense area, and even South Korea, which still maintains very good relationships with China, but is also being wooed by the United States to join in some kind of alliance, perhaps of a military character, aimed against China. So the China's position is that they would like to see a stable DPRK. They would like to see some kind of diplomatic solution to this. They would use their influence, I believe, if the United States were willing to move in that direction. But they do not want a military conflict on the Korean Peninsula, okay, because this would be very disastrous.
Jim Cavanaugh, I asked you about the number of missile launches that North Korea did in the year 2022, which was the most, 70, compared to the previous years. Now, there's one theory that says North Korea has upped its number of missile exercises because it's also wanting to send a message, but not of the direct kind, to the U.S., because it shows that what the U.S. intentions in the region are, aside from doing something about North Korea, is to target China. So with these exercises increasing to the point that it has, this may make the U.S. think twice about a military engagement in the region. Do you think that's the type of message that North Korea has sent to the U.S.? Does the U.S. see it that way?
Well, I'm sure the U.S. does see it that way, in the sense that the U.S. would like to know that there's no side action here that's going to come from North Korea if they get into a conflict with China, which very well might happen. And by the fact of doing all this test, and I think the main reason North Korea is doing all the testing is because it's doing a lot of development of new weapon systems, and it wants to make sure they work, and it wants to demonstrate to the world that they work. But the side effect of that is that it puts the United States in a position of having to think twice about. That's why the United States would like to get rid of this North Korean issue before they take on China in any way. I'm sure they'd like to do that, like they want to get rid of Syria and Iran, you know, Syria and Libya before they take on Iran. So there's a lot of things going on in that respect. But, you know, the main reason the North Koreans are doing it, I think, is because they want to develop their systems, and they need to develop their systems, which aren't completely developed. And the United States does need to worry, at least, you know, what we have to take account if we're going to have military action with China. Will the North Koreans come in, and will their missiles be part of the package that we have to deal with in such a conflict?
All right. A final question. Unfortunately, I have so many, but final question, Bill Jones, goes to you. This is an odd request, to say the least, when the U.S. holds China responsible for North Korea's multiple missile launches. It's even asked China and Russia to pressure North Korea to stop. I mean, really? Do you think that the U.S. even... Well, I mean, hey, you got to give it to the U.S. You know, they're asking what they cite as a number one and two national security threats, to please do us a favor and stop North Korea from launching these missiles. How do you view that U.S. request from both China and Russia? In under a minute, please.
Well, why would they help the United States in any sense in this issue, when Russia, of course, is under attack by the United States, and where China has been a target of hostility from the U.S., in which the Taiwan issue is now being played with? It's not a situation in which you have a whole lot of trust between these countries.
Okay.
In other circumstances, perhaps there would be cooperation if
you're
working towards like a security architecture in the Asia Pacific. They would work together. But to the extent that the U.S. has named Russia an enemy and also China as an enemy, you're not going to get too many favors out of them.
Indeed. Thank you very much for that. William Jones, Executive Intelligence Review from Leesburg. Jim Kavanaugh, political analyst and blogger from New York. Thank you. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikova Tahwei and the team, it's goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll try to have a look at the commentary of Chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. Brothers and sisters, let's listen to 173rd up to 175th verses of chapter Shu'ara.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
Wa amtarna 'alayhim matara fasaa'a matarul munzirin.
And we rained upon them a rain of stones, and evil was the rain of those who were warned.
Inna fi dhalika la'aya wa ma kana aktharuhum mu'minin.
Indeed, in that is a sign, but most of them were not to be believers.
وَإِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَهُوَ الْعَزِيزُ الرَّحِيمُ.
And indeed, your Lord, He is the Exalted in Might, the Merciful.
وَأَمْطَرْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ مَطَرًا فَسَاءَ مَطَرُ الْمُنذَرِينَ. You rained down on them a shower, and evil is the rain of them that were warned. إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَآيَةً وَمَا كَانَ أَكْثَرُهُمْ مُؤْمِنِينَ. Verily, in this there is a sign, but most of them do not believe. وَإِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَهُوَ الْعَزِيزُ الرَّحِيمُ. And verily, your Lord, certainly He is the Mighty, the Merciful. As you were with us, dear listeners, we were discussing the story of Prophet Lut and his people. He tried to criticize them of their wrong, indecent action of sodomy, but they did not stop. They threatened him. They said, if you do not stop your words, we will expel you, and you shall surely be of the ones who are expelled. لَتَكُونَنَّ مِنَ الْمُخْرَجِينَ. In response, he tried to save his society, but he couldn't, Prophet Lut. So he asked the Almighty Allah to save him and his family. رَبِّ نَجِّنِي وَأَهْلِي. and the Almighty Allah did so, illa ajuzan fil ghabirin, who was his wife. His wife had deviated thoughts like the people of Lut, so she was, as the Holy Quran says, she was not delivered. ثم دمرنا الآخرين. Then we destroyed the others. But how were they destroyed? This 173rd verse explains, وَأَمْطَرْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ مَطَرًا فَسَاءَ مَطَرُ الْمُنذَرِينَ. We rained down on them a shower, and evil is the rain of them that were warned. This shower was a shower of brimstone. Yes, the whole nature is at the service of the divine power, the same might which causes to send down the rain from sky can send down a shower of brimstone. So Allah says, وَأَمْطَرْنَا عَلَيْهِمْ مَطَرًا فَسَاءَ مَطَرُ الْمُنذَرِينَ. The rain was a rain of pebbles, which wiped out even the ruins of their buildings. And the verse continues saying, فَسَاءَ مَطَرُ الْمُنذَرِينَ. Evil is the rain of them that were warned. What a horrible rain it was. The rain overtook those threatened people. This is the power of the Almighty Allah. This is the divine power. The nature is at the service of this power. This is the very power that can send down blessings and mercies from the sky. But for these munzirin, for these people who are warned previously, the argument of Allah for these people is completed and they do not listen. فَسَاءَ مَطَرُ الْمُنذَرِينَ. This matar, this is rain, but this is so different. This is a shower of brimstone.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic approach.
We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom.
There are other verses of the Holy Quran that indicate that at first the cities of people of Lut were destroyed, then a shower of pebbles, layer on layer, came down on them. As we mentioned, in the story of Prophet Lut, this rain of stone was perhaps for this aim, that their effects would be wiped out too, and only a heap of stone and dust could be seen from those populated cities. This is the result of this wrong action. Even the remainings should be destroyed. Even the surface should be wiped out from these mischievous people. So, were these stones taken from deserts as the result of a great storm and they were poured over them? Or were they some wandering Israelites, which, by the command of Allah, fell on them? Or, as some say, was there a silent volcano near around there, which, by the command of Allah, roared and sent a rain of stones over them? It is not known, but what we know is that there were stones involved. It is certain that this fatal shower left no sign of life in that land. فَسَاءَ مَطَرُ الْمُنْذَرِينَ. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
At one of Lebanon's local supermarkets, only a few items cost a bundle of Lebanese pounds. The country's cost of living crisis is taking a heavy toll on people, as 80,000 lira equal only $1.
As Lebanon enters a third year of a deepening economic crisis, basic necessities like food and medicine have become more expensive than ever before. It has become almost a daily struggle for some families to put food on the table.
The Western sanctions on the one hand and domestic corruption on the other hand have been affecting the situation, and it is the people who are suffering.
Many blame those in power for heeding to U.S. and Western control of monetary activity. People on the street say the increasing rate of the dollar is a major contributor to the crisis.
If the dollar became high, 1,000, the items more and more, not the real price. And you can see this in other supermarkets. You go, one supermarket is cheaper than others. And around 20,000-30,000. Why? So they don't, no control should be controlled, because really nobody can afford many things now in the supermarkets because it's high prices.
God help the families who have children and are in need of basic items like milk and yogurt. Bread has become 10 times more expensive. Even onions are not affordable now. and everything is in dollar.
Currency depreciation and the lifting of subsidies have resulted in a dramatic rise in prices of medicine as well, adding to the problems of a deteriorating Lebanese economy. Lebanon's national currency has lost now more than 90% of its value. Many believe that as long as imports are priced in U.S. dollars, which controls the market, there is very little hope for economic recovery. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
A night of fun and music with the exceptional performance of the St. Petersburg Ensemble, followed by classical pieces by Tehran's Symphonic Orchestra. This is how the 38th edition of the Fajj International Music Festival wrapped up a week of orchestral, traditional, and pop performances. Aside from the outstanding performances, the event did not fail to celebrate the best of the best, with the prestigious Barbat Prize awarded in four different sections, this time also awarded to Iranian folk music.
The 38th edition of the Fajj Music Festival was very special in terms of the large number of folk music pieces that were performed, and the special award that was given to the musicians in this genre.
I'm honored to have won this prize. I've been working very hard, and I'm extremely overwhelmed right now.
This year, over 2,000 Iranian and foreign musicians, including 30 music bands, gathered in the capital to present their latest musical compositions in seven concert halls in Tehran and several others in over a dozen provinces.
The Fajr Music Festivals this time was even more glamorous than ever because of the large number of musicians who took part, not just presenting a diverse culture with each region performing its own music, but also because of upholding the name Fajr.
Fajj means dawn in Farsi and refers to a 10-day period that led to the victory of the Islamic Revolution. This has been the reason to hold cultural events, including a theater, a film, and a music festival, going by the same name every year. And this is the final part of that trio, leaving the audience at awe with its unique performances until next year, when another edition of the Fajj Theater, Film, and Music Festivals will once again bring artists and enthusiasts together in the Iranian capital. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
The U.S. wasted no time scrambling jets in response to North Korea's recent long-range missile launch, deploying strategic assets capable of carrying nuclear bombs with South Korean fighter aircraft. At the United Nations, the U.S. placed responsibility for the tension on North Korea.
We echo the Council's consistent demand that the DPRK comply with its obligations under numerous UN Security Council resolutions, abandon its weapons of mass destruction and ballistic missile program in a complete, verifiable, and irreversible manner, and engage constructively in diplomacy.
North Korea has steadily developed a nuclear deterrent in the face of expanding U.S. militarization of South Korea. China calls for dialogue.
On the Korean Peninsula issue, we adhere to pursuing in parallel the establishment of a peace mechanism and the denuclearization process of the peninsula, and address the legitimate concerns of all parties in a balanced manner, and maintain peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula.
The U.S. has agreed to frequently deploy nuclear-capable weapons to the region at South Korea's request. The U.S. and South Korea seem to have agreed to raise the tension on the Korean Peninsula in an attempt to somehow force North Korea into negotiations on arms control or denuclearization. This reverses the policy of the previous South Korean government that brought about a reduction in tension,
through engagement and dialogue. Local analysts warn of potential conflict.
When North Korea does something, the South Korea-U.S. alliance reacts. And if the South Korea-U.S. alliance does something, North Korea reacts. And this vicious cycle continues. The stronger the deployment of U.S. strategic assets, the more fragile the peace on the Korean peninsula, and the faster the arms race. And this risks creating a security dilemma and, more seriously, a war crisis.
More regional tension seems inevitable as South Korea seeks to celebrate the 70th anniversary of its alliance with the U.S. with ever larger war games. Frank Smith, Seoul.
Tensions are flaring up again across the Palestinian territories as the Israeli regime has intensified its bloody crackdown there. After a day of mayhem and bloodshed in the West Bank by the regime's forces, Israeli warplanes rained down missiles on the besieged Gaza Strip, prompting Palestinians to hit back with rockets. Wednesday's Israeli raid on West Bank was the deadliest in about two decades. Nearly a dozen people were killed and scores more were injured after the regime's forces, backed by armored vehicles, surrounded the city of Nablus and opened fire on the people, including teenagers and elderly. Thousands of Palestinians gathered to mourn the death of their loved ones. Nablus and the nearby city of Jenin have repeatedly come under Israeli attacks over the last couple of months. Palestinians find themselves helpless in front of the occupying regime and its ruthless agenda.
What is happening on the ground is organized state terrorism, which the Israeli occupation government is solely responsible for. The international silence regarding these crimes is an encouragement for the occupation.
Many believe that the inaction of the UN and other international bodies, as well as unwavering support of certain governments for Israel, emboldens the regime to go ahead with its crimes against Palestinians. In doing Israeli crimes over the past several decades, Palestinians have realized that they cannot expect more than condemnation of Israel from the international community.
The right response to Israel is the activation of resistance across the occupied territories and retaliatory attacks against the regime's forces and settlers.
The Israeli regime has piled up pressure on Palestinians with deadly crackdown, illegal detention, and demolition of their homes. Years of crippling siege of the Gaza Strip is yet another example how the regime has turned the Palestinian territory into an open prison. The people in Gaza and the West Bank have been living in fear and agony as they lose their loved ones almost on a daily basis. But Israel's Western and regional backers keep watching the regime's bloodshed silently.
The cortege makes its way down the street into Behesht-e Zahra Cemetery in Tehran. Mourners looking on solemnly as the casket is brought to the burial ground for the funeral prayers to be performed. Right before the body of Salah al-Zawawi, the former Palestinian ambassador to Iran, is laid to rest. Representatives from foreign missions in Tehran, as well as a group of government officials and pro-Palestinian NGO and human rights activists, it was his wish to be buried in Iran, and the chief mourner, his daughter Salam al-Zawawi, who replaced him as a Palestinian ambassador last year, made a powerful statement.
Jerusalem al-Quds will be free. This is what my father truly believed. And he dedicated his life to fighting against the occupiers of our land. As his final wish, he called on all Muslims around the world to help free Jerusalem al-Quds.
Al-Zawawi served as a Palestinian ambassador to Tehran for 42 years, from 1980 to 2022. He retired in February last year due to his failing health. He was the second Palestinian envoy to Iran after the revolution, succeeding Hani al-Hassan. As the longest-serving foreign diplomat in the Islamic Republic, he earned the title Muqaddam al-Sufara, which means the senior-most foreign diplomat.
He was a committed diplomat and truly believed in the unity of all Palestinians. He worked very hard to make that happen. al-Zawawi would attend every single event where there was a possibility of discussing the situation of Palestine and shedding light on the atrocities of the Zionist regime. During his tenure in Tehran, he also played an important role as diplomat. We have lost a very good friend.
During his years-long battle against the Zionist occupiers of Palestine and several decades of diplomatic activities in Iran, Zawawi always fought to safeguard the rights of oppressed Palestinians and keep the Palestinian cause alive.
According to all of our agreements, we are completely against normalizing ties with Israel. This is something that Mr. al-Zawawi stood up for. He made a lot of speeches discussing why it's absolutely wrong to normalize ties with Israeli occupiers of our land.
The late Salah al-Zawawi was like a father to all of us in the resistance front. He dedicated his life to uniting Palestinians and fighting for the freedom of our land. He wanted every single inch of Palestine to be free. May he rest in peace.
I met Mr. al-Zawawi 3 years ago when I first arrived in Tehran to serve as Syria's ambassador. But I knew him long before that. In Syria, he was a very well-known figure because of his political views and speeches. Not only did he advocate Palestinian rights, but he also played an important role in strengthening the ties of Arab countries.
To many people, Salah al-Zawawi was an icon, a role model. But to his family, he was a loving father and grandfather, too.
My grandfather was not just a leader and an ambassador. He wasn't just great at his job. He was a great person at home with his family. He was a great father. He was a great grandfather. And he was a great friend. He will be missed because, honestly, his presence was such a great influence for all of us. He was lovely, he was funny, he was motivational, and he was strong.
Throughout his career, Salah al-Zawawi took major steps to shed light on the Israeli occupation of Palestine, efforts that, according to him, had eventually made a point with the occupiers.
It is very clear to them that the people of Palestine will never forget its land. Not in 1948 and in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and 1948. We will never forget our land.
This is probably why Palestinians of all backgrounds take his loss heavily.
Salah al-Zawawi served as a Palestinian ambassador to Tehran for more than four decades. He was the second Palestinian ambassador since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979. He was also among the founding members of the Fatah movement. He will always be remembered as an influential figure in the fight against Israeli occupation. Gisum Shah Ahmadi, Tehran.
The UN Special Envoy to Yemen, Haynes Grunberg, has been busy this week meeting with Yemeni and UAE officials in the Emirates. The UN Envoy's office posted a tweet stating that the latest efforts are aimed at improving Yemen's living conditions and securing longer-term peace, security, and development. Given the UN's track record in Yemen, it behooves one to raise some questions about what security, peace, and development look like through the political lens of the United Nations. I visited Mohammed al-Nu'aymi, a member of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, to hear his take on the UN's progress in establishing security, lasting peace, and development in Yemen.
The United Nations efforts and strategies in most of the nations they have been involved in have focused on two main efforts. The first effort is gathering intelligence for Western nations because it is the West who controls the UN. The second effort is to pave the way for Western states to implement their political agenda. For example, in Yemen, they want to control the country's political affairs and geography. If they are unable to achieve this, their second option is to divide Yemen.
Al-Nu'aymi also said the UN and its partners' political ambitions are not limited to Yemen.
They are not just planning to divide Yemen. They are planning to fragmentize the entire region, including the states that are helping them in this effort. For example, they are planning to divide Egypt into three states and Saudi Arabia into five states.
Abdel Khalik Qobar, a Yemeni judge I spoke with, said cases of war crimes should be filed against members of the United Nations, who he says are actively engaged in covering up the crimes against humanity perpetuated on Yemenis. In his televised speech last week, leader of Ansarullah movement, Sayyid Abdel Malik al-Houthi, called on the Yemeni people to be prepared for war in case peaceful efforts fail to bring about the Yemeni people's demands.
The UN claims to be engaged in peaceful efforts to bring an end to the conflict in Yemen. However, according to Ansarullah officials, the UN body has been engaged in efforts to divide countries in the region. Officials we spoke with believe this is part of a greater plan which aims to prevent the Muslim world from uniting against Western imperialism. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Bringing currency volatility under control is the name of the game for the new governor of the Central Bank of Iran, Mohammad Reza Farzin, who is charged with getting a grip on the Iranian rial and devising new strategies to alleviate the country's economic woes amid unprecedented Western sanctions. And to do so, he has unveiled a new golden currency exchange center in an effort to regulate market fluctuations, or in his own words, stabilize market rates by adjusting demand and supply. But most importantly, as a powerful tool to control speculative inflation. For those familiar with Iran's economy, the most essential economic parameter that can effectively tip the scales.
We have enough resources to provide for all demands for exchange. The main challenge we are facing is speculative inflation as a consequence of negative forecasts, which leads to producers increasing the price of commodities and therefore creates a vicious circle. We need to overcome this challenge, and I'm calling on all those involved in economic activities to join hands with us and strictly follow the new policies of this newly launched center of exchange.
This means that all foreign exchange resources, notably from export, must be supervised by the central bank.
The 28,500 toman exchange rate for basic commodities and essential medicines still stands. Other demands for foreign currencies have been carefully categorized, and in the first leg, we are allocating $4 million to specific purposes, which include travel, studying abroad, and research projects, the details of which will be announced shortly.
This is actually a policy that has been successfully implemented by Russia and allowed the ruble to recover its value within a month after its initial plunge at the beginning of the Ukraine war.
Russia's success in implementing this policy is mostly due to their system of financial supervision, which ensures that regulatory rules are strictly observed. There are major differences between the economic and monetary structures and approaches of Iran and Russia. And if Iran wants to succeed, it has to take all this into account.
And the good news is, if this policy is successfully implemented, the recovery of the rial is imminent in a situation very similar to what happened in Russia. Russia's national currency is gaining strength. The ruble is hitting new highs against the U.S. dollar. The Russian economy is making a turnaround despite unprecedented Western sanctions and pressure. Now Iran, taking Russia as a role model, is hoping to do the same. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خداست، ذکر الله تطمئن می‌کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanallah.
Baytullah al-Haram, the house of Allah in Mecca, is the first house erected for people. Simplicity of the house and the mosque, as in time of the Prophet Abraham and early days of Islam, and the congregation of Muslims in that unpolluted place is 1,000 times greater than decoration of the Kaaba and tall buildings, while being negligent of the main purpose, which is rising for people and securing the interests of people.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters,